Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid: high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal.
Hello, and welcome to a very special World Oceans Day edition of Earth 911's Sustainability in Your Ear. This, of course, is the podcast conversation about accelerating the transition to a sustainable carbon neutral society. And I'm your host, Mitch Ratcliffe. Thank you for joining the conversation. And happy World Oceans Day. This is the first of a special series of interviews sponsored by New Day Impact Investing. And our frequent guest, New Day Impact CEO Doug Heskey, and I will be sitting down with leading environmentalists to discuss how market-based solutions can create bigger improvements faster than environmental advocacy alone. And today, our guests are Travel Channel hosts Ashlyn and Philippe Cousteau, who will introduce us to the devastating impacts of harvesting krill for the nutraceutical and pet food industries, as well as to alternatives that can reduce or eliminate the need for krill harvests. What are krill? They're tiny shrimp-like crustaceans that serve as the primary food source for many marine animals, including fish, whales, seals, and penguins in the Antarctic Southern Ocean. Just as humans once hunted whales almost to extinction, krill are being harvested extensively in the Antarctic Southern Ocean now, so much so that the species is at risk. Demand for products made from krill and the oil that can be extracted from them has reduced populations by as much as 80% since the 1970s, and they could face losses of another 40% because of the impacts of climate change. In other words, we're talking about 10% of the entire krill population in 1970 still available today. Humanity needs to take stock and reduce krill harvests. These tiny creatures are capable of capturing and sequestering up to 23 million tons of CO2 a year, or about 50% of the planet's natural capacity to absorb carbon dioxide. This represents what's referred to as a natural service, something that humanity gets but doesn't pay for, that is worth more than $15 billion annually in avoided climate impacts. In addition, a healthy krill population can support large species, especially whales, that are responsible for mixing nutrients in different layers of the ocean, which is a key source of food both for krill and other sea life. There are more environmentally responsible sources of brain and heart-healthy omega-3 oils than krill, and we can replace the krill meal used as a filler in pet food. If we don't change course, krill demand is expected to grow by 8% a year, or more than 120% per decade, which could lead to a complete collapse of the population and, along with it, of the other animals in a critical food chain. New Day Impact Investing and the Cousteau's Earth Echo International, a nonprofit that supports youth discovery and protection of the world's oceans, have laid out a 5-year plan to educate companies and consumers about the risks of over-harvesting krill. They will raise $65 million to invest in public companies and startups that offer better solutions than krill fishing. It's a unique approach to driving change. So let's talk with Doug Heskey and Ashlyn and Philippe Cousteau about the krill population and its crisis. You can learn more about Earth Echo International at www.earthecho.org. Earth Echo is all one word, no space, no dash, earthecho.org, and about New Day Impact Investing at newdayimpact.com. Also, no spaces, no dashes, newdayimpact.com. Welcome to the show, Ashlyn, Philippe, and Doug. Say hi to the folks. Let's try to orient everybody to who's speaking.
Ashlyn.
And Mitch, Philippe, you're delighted.
Mitch, great to see you again. This is Doug.
As always, Doug, it's great to have you. Well, Philippe and Ashlyn, thank you so much for joining us to talk on this World Oceans Day. It's such an important thing that we are talking about, and we often take the seas for granted. I wanted to start off by asking about the krill population and where we are today. How close are we to the tipping point where this just becomes a natural disaster?
Well, it's a great question, Mitch, and maybe we should...
Can we say yesterday?
Yeah. I think we should, you know, level set everybody and make sure, you know, we as environmental advocates and explorers and journalists and storytellers, you know, we've covered a lot of issues around the ocean. And most recently in the last few years, we've really become deeply engaged in the Southern Ocean, which, you know, for most people is extraordinarily far away, remote, not a place they will ever visit. Of course, Southern Ocean is the ocean that surrounds Antarctica. And yet is arguably the most important ocean. I say that with quotation marks because, of course, there's only one ocean, but we tend to divide it up into several. And it is the most important part of the ocean, let's say, and is absolutely critical to the functioning of both our climate and of the nutrient food system that drives the biodiversity of the ocean and the health of the ocean. And it's a place that is under, you know, increasing onslaught from warming temperatures. The ice is melting at a catastrophic rate on the, you know, in Antarctica, and also increasing pressure from a little known fishery called the krill fishery. And krill is a very small crustacean, but in the Southern Ocean in particular, it is the central food source for most of the species that most people will probably be familiar with: whales, seals, penguins, everybody loves penguins, and fish, birds, etc. And it also is part of arguably the largest carbon sink on the planet, sequestering up to 13 billion tons of carbon a year by, you know, the krill eat phytoplankton, which is a plankton floating in the surface of the ocean that creates 50% of the world's oxygen. Krill eats that phytoplankton, and sequesters that carbon in their waste that sinks down into the deep ocean, and then also is a critical part of the diet of many creatures that then also sequester that carbon in their tissue and then in their waste that sinks down. And so, you know, the Southern Ocean is absolutely vital and currently is already on the ropes, so to speak, to answer your question directly, Mitch. Mm-hmm. You know, the warming oceans are creating havoc in those systems that are traditionally, you know, very cold water. And also the things like the krill fishery, which is a fishery going down to just really catch krill predominantly for nutraceuticals and for supplements, is having a pretty serious impact on the health of those systems as well. So it's not looking good.
We talked a little bit in the introduction about some of those pressures, but what would happen if the krill population collapsed? Can you paint a picture of the impact on the seas and on our opportunity to look to the oceans as a blue economy that could help offset some of our land-based practices today?
So if krill population went away, if it collapsed, we would need a lot of black paint. You know, since krill really feed, you know, almost as Philippe said, every single species of creature in Antarctica, and it is those fertile waters that that are then circulated throughout our entire planet that are also the basis of our entire ocean food web. So even if you live on the coast of Africa or in the Arctic or off the coast of North Carolina, you know, the food, if you consume seafood, that seafood is supported by a healthy Southern Ocean ecosystem. And the keystone species is krill. So if krill collapses, it would be catastrophic.
To put it simply, we can't solve the climate crisis without restoring and protecting the ocean. And we cannot restore and protect the ocean without protecting the Southern Ocean. And the keystone species, as Ashlyn said, to the health of the Southern Ocean is krill. So it all, you know, comes down to there. Now, there are many, many issues from an ocean health perspective, but krill, we like to say, is the biggest climate and ocean catastrophe that no one's talking about.
And Vince, you mentioned the blue economy, and thankfully people are looking at the blue economy. So the blue economy is really the, as we like to think of the blue economy, the positive impact that humanity and business can have on the ocean and what the ocean can do for. But there would be no blue economy if there is no healthy Southern Ocean.
There might be certain aspects of it, right? I mean, you know, sure. Offshore wind. Offshore wind. But when you think about, healthy ocean systems, you know, sustainable, you know, fisheries, for example, et cetera. I mean, so many of those systems rely on a healthy Southern Ocean, as Ashlyn pointed out.
And we didn't talk about oxygen.
Well, I briefly mentioned, but yes, interesting aside, you know, from to illustrate this, I think a little bit more to your point is people oftentimes think about the disruption of the global carbon cycle mm-hmm. as happening during the Industrial Revolution when we began to, you know, use coal, oil, and gas as an energy source. And when in fact it predates the Industrial Revolution by a few centuries. The average whale sequesters in its tissue the equivalent of about 1,200 trees. Mm-hmm. Sequestering that carbon. And when they die, they're negatively buoyant and they sink to the bottom. And so for centuries from the 15th, 16th century, really into 17th, 18th centuries, when whaling around the world became by Europe and the United States became such an enormous industry, we were killing millions of whales over that period of time. And so that was really the beginning of the disruption of this carbon cycle, of which whales are really important. Because what did we do with those whales? We rendered them into oil and burned them into lamps. So we took all that carbon that was trapped and stored in these whales and we burned it and put it up into the atmosphere. But more worryingly than that, what we did is we disrupted this critical carbon system. So phytoplankton, as I mentioned earlier, is this plankton that provides that photosynthesizes and creates oxygen. Right? And it's estimated that it creates somewhere around 50% of the oxygen in the world. Krill feed on phytoplankton. And in the Southern Ocean, to give you an idea of scale, you can see these krill phytoplankton blooms from space. They're so big. And so what researchers found is that in the historical record and sediment, for example, that they were able to track, the assumption was that, you know, because whales are an enormous predator of krill, when the whales died out or were being, you know, hunted to near extinction, that the krill populations would explode. The opposite happened. And what scientists realized is that whale poop, when they eat the krill, is rich in iron.
Yep.
Phytoplankton needs iron. So without the whales in this relatively simple circular system, without that really just whale poop to seed the oceans with iron, you saw phytoplankton populations decline. Mm-hmm. Phytoplankton is the food source of krill. And so without the phytoplankton, you saw krill populations decline. And so you saw this whole system begin to collapse hundreds of years, this critical carbon system, before we assume it was really coal, oil, and gas.
So humans have this really unnerving capacity to ignore something's value until it's gone. And what we're talking about here is a carbon sink much larger than the Amazon, which is where most of us focus our concern. And this creates $15 billion a year in benefits to humans. Doug, from your perspective as the finance guy, how do you explain the concept of a natural service and get folks to understand what it is we're potentially just throwing away?
Well, the most important thing to reflect on, Mitch, is the financial comparison mm-hmm. between what krill absorb in carbon every single year and the cost external to that if they weren't around for us to remove that level of carbon. I mean, 23 million tons of carbon are stored each year from the krill population. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's equivalent to 18 million cars being removed from the road, or 24,000 wind turbines operating in a single year, or 16 million homes' electrical usage every year. I mean, those numbers are staggering and extraordinary. And there really is nothing more important, as both Philippe and Ashlyn had previously said, than preserving this population for humanity.
Because of what it does for us and doesn't charge us for. But how do we create an economy around the preservation of krill? And of course, this is part of the direction you're headed with the Ocean Health ETF. What do we do to monetize that carbon savings in order to help preserve the krill population?
Well, I think the most important thing is understanding that the destruction of krill is going to have catastrophic effects, correct? Mm-hmm. And so there is an industry that is already built around the harvesting of krill today. But those organizations have the potential to redirect their efforts in other areas that could be equally profitable. And so if you think about the production of nutraceuticals, mm-hmm. which are a primary consumer of krill, particularly here in the US, of how krill play an essential part in the production of aquaculture feed, of livestock feed, and even pet food. There are very logical replacements to that through an algae-based production system, which we have discussed extensively. In fact, Philippe and Ashlyn are working on, particularly in the nutraceutical space, a logical replacement for that as well.
Well, now, omega-3 oils are what we're talking about, which is the heart and brain healthy oils a lot of people take. I take it myself. We typically hear this comes from salmon. Philippe and Ashlyn, what's the true story in terms of where nutritional oils are really coming from, and what role does krill play in it?
Well, I think, you know, there's been years and decades of research that omega-3 oil is beneficial from everything, as you said, Mitch, from your brain and your heart to your skin to your mood, muscles, ligaments. I mean, really, you name it. It's a super oil.
It's vital nutrient that we as human beings do not produce.
Correct.
But we've always been told that it's salmon that produce it. But it sounds
So what most people, when you say omega-3, most people either immediately think fish oil, mm-hmm. or they think krill oil. I will say the first thing that I want everybody listening to walk away with is fish and krill do not make their own omega-3s. They get omega-3s by eating algae. Mm-hmm. So if we're just looking at this as a health, from a health and wellness perspective in that specific lens, it's so silly that we wouldn't go straight to the source. We should always cut out the middleman, right? And go straight to the source. So just speaking from that health perspective, we should all be taking algae anyways, because that is the primary source of omega-3s.
Yeah, and it's interesting because you think, you know, why fish, right? And fish is something that is the insidious nature of inertia, right? Yep. So people have been eating fish oil. It started actually in the 1800s with cod liver oil in Scandinavia, research into tribes in Greenland, Inuit tribes in northern Canada that they found by eating high amounts of fish, had high, you know, and were getting nutrients from that. And so they had better heart health than people that were not. And so it's kind of murky, but there's some research that goes back to there, some ad hoc research to the late 1800s. And that started this kind of craze for, at the time, fish oil, cod liver oil predominantly, because cod is so abundant. As a source of these heart healthy, body healthy oils,
until we fish them
there's not many really cod left anymore. So that's really where it started, and it just became part of the vernacular of society that fish oil, be it salmon, or actually most of it comes from nowadays from anchovies or sardines. Oh, really? But certainly a selling point for people to eat salmon. And so it has just kind of become this de facto thing that, oh, we get omegas from fish oil. More recently, in the last decade or so, krill oil has really begun to catch on. One of the downsides of fish oil is that it oxidizes very easily. And so then it becomes, you know, toxic essentially to your body, like smoking a cigarette. And so krill eats a different type of, another type of algae where it gets an antioxidant called astaxanthin. That is that has these antioxidant powers. And so it helps to eliminate or limit the frequency of krill oil oxidizing. So that's why it was started to be really commercialized and sold as a high value, you know, source of omega-3s. But as Ashton said, the irony is that none of those animals create their own omega-3s. So I was equated to, like, it's like, if you wanted vitamin A, let's say vitamin A or a vitamin from acorns, and we say, well, we've got a great idea. We're going to go into the forest. We're going to kill all the animals that eat acorns, and we're going to grind them up into like this goo, this mush of guts and brain and eyes and fur and everything. And then we're going to squeeze the oil out, or we're going to treat it with a bunch of chemicals, and then we're going to get those vitamins. And instead of being, well, why don't we just go get the acorns? No. Let's not do that. Let's go get all the little furry animals and grind them up. That's what we're doing in the ocean, right? Yeah. We are skipping the source of these products for what is a multi-billion dollar industry that is the source, really, of a terrible destruction of the Southern Ocean. It's pretty mind-boggling when you think about it.
So how do we need to commercialize the production of algae so that we can harvest the oil directly from the algae? Is that a problem that we have begun to crack?
Yeah. So, I mean, people have been eating microalgae and macroalgae, which includes seaweed. I mean, people have been eating this for since the dawn of time.
Yeah.
And getting the benefits from it. I would say that it recently, up until at least the last decade, but really probably even in the last 5 to 6, 7 years, you know, companies have been able to really figure out a way to easily farm, harvest, and excrete the algae oil, or extract the algae oil. Thank you. And that's what's really exciting, is something that seemed hard and expensive and unattainable now is attainable. We just need to get more of these farms and more of these companies up and running, and we could literally, you know,
save the Southern Ocean. Yeah, because, you know, we all started getting into this, Mitch, about 3 or 4 years ago, joining the board of an organization called Antarctica 2020, and it's making efforts to protect. You know, the focus of this group is to protect and establish 3 marine protected areas in the Southern Ocean. And it would be areas off of East Antarctic and the Weddell Sea and the Antarctic Peninsula. And the focus of this effort is to protect a total of 1% of the ocean, which is absolutely critical. This is the most important areas in the Southern Ocean that we need to set aside for nature. Not all of the Southern Ocean, just a small portion of it. But this is an area with a concentration of krill, and also the concentration of the penguins and the whales and the birds that feed on that krill. Unfortunately, because that's where the krill is concentrated, that is also where the krill fishery is concentrated. Mm-hmm. And the global body that is charged with protecting the Southern Ocean, it's called CAMLAR, is made up of all the 26 countries that have scientific operations in Antarctica. A majority of those countries, all but 2, have agreed that establishing these MPAs is critical to maintaining the health of the Southern Ocean, particularly in the face of warming oceans, where already it's estimated that the krill population will decline by 30% simply because of climate change over the next few decades. Right. Not to mention the fisheries pressure, which are concentrated in these areas. And so the main reason that these marine protected areas, which is arguably one of the most important acts of conservation in the ocean right now that needs to happen urgently. The reason that those are being opposed is because 2 countries and quietly a few others don't want any further restrictions on the krill fishery. They want to be able to go down and exploit the krill, and they want to be able to do it for fish food, pet food, and omega-3 supplements. It's a shocking thing when you think of humanity's tendency to do some dumb things, that we literally want to undercut and destroy
the largest carbon sink on our planet
and the most biodiverse, like, important section of the ocean for supplements. But that's really what's happening. And the good news, as Ash said, is like the technology to create algae-based omegas is there, is here, it's available. And the challenge now as storytellers for us is, and as people in financial markets like Doug, is to both drive capital mm-hmm. towards these companies and towards the building that. And then for us to also help consumers understand that, like, wow, there is a plant-based vegan alternative for omega-3s that actually has a higher absorption rate proven than fish or krill oil. And that's a simple choice that we can make to help protect the most important part of our ocean, the Southern Ocean.
And of course, you work to educate youth all the time through Earth Echo's citizen and youth engagement programs. These are the generations that are both going to suffer the worst impacts of climate change and have the most leverage over those adults in the room who are making these really dumb decisions. What are you doing to get kids activated to start to change the public perception of krill?
So the organization I founded about 17 years ago, Earth Echo International, we've grown to become a leading global youth environmental education and youth leadership organization. And that's the hope, right, Mitch? I mean, I think that with all the bad news that exists out there, the doom scrolling that, you know, on social and media these days, it really just focuses predominantly on the negative. Yeah. What we miss is that there is a generation of young people out there that are optimistic, determined, angry, frustrated, but determined to shift that and drive and focus that frustration in solving problems. It's a global community, connected young people like never before. And we've worked with over 1.2 million young people in 146 countries in this last 17 years. And what we see is an understanding of the importance, the central role the ocean plays more than any past generation, an appreciation of the crisis around climate, and a generation of young people that are driven to focus on issues like 30 by 30, which is the global effort to protect 30% of the ocean by 2030. And young people that are really fired up and active around these types of issues, recognizing again that the status quo is literally destroying their world and their future, and that they don't need to sit around and take it, but that they can really step up and take action. And they are. And it's pretty extraordinary to see. And really what gives us hope to see the young people around the world we work with who are just doing amazing things.
But also they're knowledgeable consumers. You know, 75% of millennials make their purchasing choices based upon if that company, you know, agrees with their values or if that company is doing something good for the planet. So it's the businesses and the industries that are, you know, that are not paying attention to the health and well-being of people on our planet that are going to get left to the wayside. That also gives us hope, because hopefully that means the bad actors will literally get put out of business by these younger consumers as they grow and increase to have increase their buying power.
Let's imagine that we're standing in the bathroom. Mom or dad is getting out the fish oil, which turns out to be krill oil. What should a kid say? How can they wake their parents up and potentially get them to communicate to the brands they buy from that it's time to stop?
I mean, this is the one great thing, you know, being in the environmental movement, it's for so long has been, don't do that. That's bad. Don't do that. Bad, bad, bad person.
Yeah.
In this situation, not only is there a, maybe you shouldn't do that, but there's also a better solution and a better products that are out there. So it's so refreshing that we don't just have to say no. We can say, hey, krill in the ocean is good. Krill oil is bad. You know,
but if you want the benefits of the omegas
and take, you know, take algae-based omega-3s because they're actually more absorbable. You can take a smaller pill. They're vegan.
They're providing
sustainable jobs. No fish burps.
No, we hate those.
And it's, you know, it truly is. And even these, you know, and these algae farms are also sequestering carbon, which is incredible. So
yeah, that's a great point. Like, even if you don't give a hoot about the Southern Ocean or the environment or anything that we're talking about right now, if your focus is like, I take omega-3s for better health, it's proven, clinically proven that we're launching a brand called Sivoir. Here in the next few months. And, you know, it's clinically proven that the oils that we use are 1.7 times more absorbable than krill or fish oil. So it's a more absorbable oil because it's a more absorbable fat, essentially, that is extracted from the algae. Fish oil is a triglyceride, which is not very bioavailable. to humans. Yeah. It mostly just passes through your system, which is why you have right. to take such enormous amounts of fish oil, because you're only able to metabolize some of it in that specific lipid, that triglyceride. Krill oil is also is slightly more absorbable than fish oil, but not much. And it is in a phospholipid form, whereas the oils that come from algae are glyco and phospholipids and polar lipids. And so being more absorbable, your body's more bioavailable for your body, which means it's better for you. And as Ashwin said, the other nice thing, it's grown on controlled farms, land-based farms. The only inputs is sunlight and CO2 that is bubbled into the water. So they're actually a carbon sink. It can be grown on non-arable land. In other words, land that can't be farmed. So providing jobs to people. And you have none of the potential toxins that are present in the ocean and are present in krill and are present in fish oil. And that's why those oils, prior to being, you know, consoled, have to be refined with chemicals to try and remove, let's see, what's in the ocean these days, mercury, lead, PCBs, microplastics, all that good stuff that's floating around in the fish and in the krill. And already none of that exists with algae-based oils. So you have all these benefits of the algae, none of the downside. And it's also, again, forget the environment. It's also just better for the consumer. So it's a pretty extraordinary story. And now it's really just about helping people understand that there's a better choice out there.
Yeah. You know, this is a wonderful conversation. It's so important. I want to take a quick commercial break. We're going to be right back.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal. Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
And we are back to continue a very special World Oceans Day conversation with Travel Channel hosts Ashlyn and Philippe Cousteau, as well as New Day Impact Investing CEO Doug Heskey. We just closed out the last section talking about the potential for an algae-based economy that could transform the global South. Do you see the rise of algae industries as a potential source of jobs and a solution for global warming in the global South?
Yes. I mean, I think, you know, these algae farms are an opportunity to, you know, not only create omega-3s, but to create protein, to create jobs, to create truly sustainable jobs, by the way. Mm-hmm. I think every country on the globe could have these. So let's explain actually how the farms work a little bit more. So as Philippe was mentioning, you know, you can really take any land. So let's take the land that's not being used, right? Let's take the overworked farmland or the land that used to be temperate and due to climate change and shifting weather patterns is now way too dry for anyone to farm anything on it. You can take that land, dig some shallow trenches that are in the shape of, you know, big ovals, put in some turbines that are solar powered to help keep the water moving because you don't want the water to be stagnant.
Okay.
Then you take brackish water. So that's in between fresh and in between salt water, which really isn't used, isn't really usable for anything, except when brackish water is needed. So brackish water,
shallow. You couldn't normally use it to irrigate anything. Right?
Yeah, exactly. So it's got a little bit of salt in it.
You know, water that you wouldn't use for drinking or for irrigation of crops.
Yep.
Right. So that's great.
You get your algae. The only thing that algae needs is sunlight and CO2. Mm-hmm. So goodness gracious. Now the farm.
Plenty of CO2 floating around.
Lots of CO2 floating around. And the farm that we're specifically getting our algae from, they're in Texas and New Mexico. They actually have to purchase CO2 from the local power plant. And then they bubble it in through gas. They get it in a gas state. They bubble it in to feed the algae with the sunlight. And those solar powered little turbines, and the algae grows. You harvest it, you extract the omega-3 oil from it. And what's really exciting is what's left over is one of the products of what's left over from that process is a protein that is denser in protein by weight than pea and whey. And that's what's really exciting about that is you can then feed people.
Yeah.
You just described a full life cycle solution to half of the problems we're talking about.
Exactly.
That's the thing. It's a great example of like the power of the ocean. And we work on issues around kelp farms and you know, one thing that I think is important to mention is that, you know, a North Star for us is always thinking, you know, innovating, thinking ahead, continuing that legacy. And for us, we need to move beyond this idea of sustainability, which is a mediocre goal, I think, at best. When you think particularly,
do we want to sustain the planet the way it is right now?
Not really.
I think so.
You know, we're biodiversity collapse. We've seen 50% of the world's biodiversity disappear in 40 years. We're seeing, you know, we're racing pell mell towards 1.5 degrees, if not 2 degrees.
And we're worried about our children's
future. Yeah, I mean, it's not rosy. So how do we actually look to restore systems? And when we think about utilizing algae farms to supplant the destruction of the ocean, be it for fish or krill oil, we're helping to restore those systems whilst providing sustainable jobs, healthy source of protein and omegas. In areas that are arid. So this is very much an opportunity. While these farms are currently in the United States, you know, I know the company that we're working with, their vision is that these farms could be in Africa, could be in China, could be in places that need this kind of localized economic development, localized sources of truly sustainable, one would argue, restorative protein. So it's you know, again, demonstrates the power of the ocean. I think one of the biggest challenges that we want people to remember, particularly today of all days, is that the ocean is oftentimes overlooked, right? We talk about land-based solutions to climate, the climate catastrophe that we're facing, the biodiversity catastrophe we're facing. And we often, I think because we are terrestrial beings, we focus on the world around us, planting trees, for example. And yet the ocean carries and brings so much better solutions than many of the land-based solutions we think about. I mean, you know, restoring a mangrove forest can return a 6x carbon sequestration than a terrestrial forest.
Well, and we have so much more ocean than we do land. It just makes sense.
All the coastlines, not to mention protection against sea level rise, storms, their biodiverse habitats that grow much quicker than terrestrial forests, seagrass beds as well. So we generally think of, in all of our work, you know, the oceans are an extraordinary source of hope and opportunity, not just a victim of our excess, but also can be a powerful ally in solving problems. And the algae story is one of those wonderful stories that is so exciting and that provides so much profit promise for to improve people's health, to feed people, to sequester carbon, to provide truly sustainable jobs. It's really extraordinary.
So, Doug, you're working on the new ocean health portfolio, and you'll launch an ETF in order to raise and invest $65 million in that program. Tell us about the plan you have and the goals for the ocean health portfolio.
Mitch, the big driver for the new portfolio, built around not just ocean health, but in particular around this krill project for the Southern Ocean, is really, number one, designed to raise awareness for this critical issue. Mm-hmm. But number two, to begin impacting consumer behavior and sentiment, and then corporate policy and practice around some of these practices that big distributors of nutraceuticals, organizations like Walmart and CVS and Costco, can have on their circumstance. There are organizations, big public organizations all over the country, that are trying to find a way to have a positive impact on the health and well-being of our population and on the environment. And what better way to do this, especially given that there's such an easy replacement, mm-hmm. removing krill from store shelves and replacing it with algae-based supplements. So the design of the program and the design of the portfolio is not just to invest in responsible companies that are trying to improve the health of our oceans, but including organizations whereby we will directly be engaging with and working together with them to bring about a better solution than the one that's currently being provided today.
So how would you describe what success will look like for an investor in the portfolio?
Success for an investor really is driven by two things. Of course, through the generation of financial returns on any particular portfolio, but of equal importance, delivering what are real and substantial impact outcomes for how capital is deployed in the portfolio to make measurable change. So as an example, one of those things will be the reduction of the distribution of nutraceuticals through major consumer retailing outlets. Another one, and this is really designed to be a part of phase two of the campaign, which is working directly with industrial manufacturers and getting them to think differently about their practices and how they're incorporating krill and fish oil in the manufacturing process and replacing that with algae. And then thirdly, addressing the harvesters, which have built big businesses around harvesting of not just krill, but around other seafood life to produce omega-3s and fish oils.
And Ashlyn and Philippe, how will Earth Echo International participate in this? So are you going to be selecting companies, helping to set criteria for investment decisions?
We definitely don't set the criteria for investment decisions or anything. That is Doug's expertise and New Day's expertise. Our involvement is really on the advocacy side, advisory about the issues mm-hmm. facing the ocean. In particular, though, Ashton and I are, we don't like to armchair it. So we like to get involved as entrepreneurs as well. We started a couple companies over the years. We're going to be launching what we're calling Seafoar Wellness. Our own vegan omega-3 line in a couple months here. And the whole point is really to help expand the offering in the market, really help people understand, tell the story of this extraordinary product. It's important in the bigger kind of picture of the world and how it can help improve the health of the environment and also help improve people's health. So we're really, really excited about Seafoar and that journey as part of this bigger picture of this market-based approach, entrepreneurial approach to solving problems.
And educational approach. Because again, at the end of the day, people just don't realize that their fish oil and or their krill oil is bad for the planet. And it can also be bad for them. So for us, it's just getting people to make the switch. Just switching their omega-3s to algae-based omega-3s will keep countless fish, countless krill in the ocean. It will keep ecosystems intact. It will keep, and we truly believe that if we can really change the financial model for the krill industry, it can save Antarctica. And that's why we're doing this.
Such an important point too. And we have been consumed over the last several months in pulling this program together, which is a collaboration amongst New Day, Earth Echo International, and a number of other organizations that are very, very deep in the space. Mm-hmm. And the feedback that we've gotten from organizations whom we're already engaged with and new ones who were in the part of the process of pulling them into the effort has been very positive. And everybody is in agreement. While there are fascinating things that are going on from a technological standpoint in terms of development of alternative-based solutions, like in algae-based omega-3s, development of market-based solutions to solve this problem is going to be critical in order for us to do this in the time frame in which we need to do it in. And we've talked about sort of this role that we're filling akin to, you know, what happened over in China over the last number of years, where Yao Ming stepped up and said, guys, you know, harvesting shark fins is just not cool anymore, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the model that we want to apply to krill.
Well, you're going to raise some of the funding to do awareness campaigns. What kinds of campaigns are you thinking about? And what are the key messages you'll be communicating both to consumers and to the brands that are thinking about how they might change?
Well, first and foremost, we want to be prolific. So we want to make sure that, particularly here in the US, that there's nobody that misses this message. Mm-hmm. And so we are going to begin working with an activator and pulling in all of the necessary people that are part of finding the solution. And there are some really interesting things that are in development right now associated with media that Philippe and Ashlyn can speak more to as well, that is sort of creating this balance between the seriousness of this issue and something that will be more broadly entertaining.
Do tell.
Yeah, that's what we do. I mean, you know, both from when working with our extensive network of young leaders who are already deeply engaged in the work around 30 by 30, again, protecting 30% of the ocean by 2030, which is a globally accepted, you know, goal of the minimum we have to do to protect what's left of ocean biodiversity. And so, you know, engaging young people in this krill campaign is going to be a big part of that. We're also working on a documentary about this with some pretty extraordinary fellow filmmakers. You know, Ashlyn's long experience and history as a producer and host and journalist, and my work over the years in documentaries as well. So that's a lot of fun. So it is very much thinking about, right, this is one of those issues that is one people aren't talking about that we can solve, right? I mean, there's so many big intractable problems, and we are engaged on many of these, from, you know, how do we advance carbon sequestration technologies? How do we think about broad networks of MPAs and sustainable fisheries? How do we think, you know, there's stuff out there, and we're involved in a lot of these issues. This krill crisis is one that has a very direct cause. It is a fishery that is used for predominantly that the highest value, 70% of the value of this market is for nutraceuticals in North American like market. Like, that's the main use of this, a product that has a better alternative.
Yeah, I was going to say, 70% of the value of krill is for nutraceuticals, which has not just a replacement, but a superior replacement. I mean, that is crazy to me. What gets us so excited, because this is achievable. This is a low-hanging fruit win for our ocean, for our planet, for people and the planet. People just need a little bit of education. And then they're like, oh, well, of course I'm going to switch my supplements and save the ocean. And then we can check the box and move on to the next issue. Yeah. Like, that's what...
It's pretty extraordinary. Yeah. In all of our career, you know, my entire life, Ashlyn, in the last 13 years since she's been working, you know, in this space, we've never seen anything that is this pretty straightforward. When, you know, palm oil, I'm sure it's an issue, Mitch, you've talked about a lot over the years.
Sure.
You know, your listeners are familiar with palm oil is a big problem. I did a series with CNN International about it in Sumatra, and it's horrifying what we're doing. But palm oil is a very useful oil. There is no better alternative to palm oil. It's programmable, you know, the chemically, which is why it's used in everything from lipstick to chocolate. So the best you could do is be like, okay, sustainable palm oil. Now, this challenge with krill is a very small market. It is for nutraceuticals. It's not all of a sudden going to be used in chocolate and topicals and cosmetics. Like, there's not other uses for krill oil beyond this. This is a high value use. And as Ashton said, there's a better, healthier, more effective alternative. And so it's rare that you come across these kind of huge, big problems with global implications that have a very direct, actionable, operational solution that can be implemented to solve that problem. And you'll see folks, go ahead.
And building on that, not only could we meet the current demand, but we could make more oil, nutritional oil, available for people all over the world instead of just here in North America.
And it can be farmed. It's, you know, the barrier to entry is not that high. You don't need massive krill fishing ships or massive fish, you know, for the fish oil fishing ships that go along and are also terribly devastating to many communities, particularly across the coast of Africa, where these big global fishing fleets come in and hoover up all the sardines and then civetta, leaving these communities impoverished because there's no more fisheries left of their traditional artisanal fisheries that sustained communities. And so you don't need to do that. You can, you know, as Ashton explained earlier, these algae farms are an alternative that's low tech, that's accessible to people. And that's the long-term vision. Right now it's building, you know, the market here. North America is the primary consumer of these omegas. It's the biggest market. We need to tackle that first, and then we can continue to scale. But our partners, you know, our brand Ciwar is really going to be, you know, a supplement brand. But the partners that we work with who are doing the farming, who are creating the algae, we know that their vision is a product that can be utilized as farms, that can be spread around the world to provide protein and health for people.
Now, one of the things about a market-based approach to this is it brings companies into the dialogue, and many environmentalists just deeply suspect companies. And Doug, you've got McKesson, Kroger, Costco, CVS, and some other companies in the model portfolio you're putting together. Are they already making progress? What earns them a place in your list?
So unfortunately, Mitch, most of them are not. I mean, it's not to say that they're not making progress in other areas, but the issue associated with harvesting of krill in the Southern Ocean hasn't been one that has been much top of mind for a lot of these organizations. So what our intention is to start with the major distributors, so the Walmarts, CVSs, and Costcos. And we do believe that through influencing policy and practice at those organizations, we can get others to follow suit. And that is one of the first things that we'll do over the course of the next 6 months.
How do you break down the wall around the resistance people have toward business being involved in these kinds of decisions? The example I would point to is Scott Burns' extrapolations on Apple TV Plus, which did a great job of illustrating what it would be like to be living in a 1 and 2 and even higher degrees increase environment, but caricatured business as the whole problem, to the degree that at the end, the solution was to put one corporate leader in space prison, and then everything was going to be okay. How do we get a more nuanced conversation about the role of business?
Well, there is no doubt about it that in many regards, so many of the problems that we're faced with today have been largely contributed to, not wholly contributed, in part contributed to by major public organizations. And so they have to be a part of the solution, And we know that they're not going away. I mean, even as it relates to most of the major integrated oil companies, they may be around 100 years from now in different fashion, but they're not going away, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the problem is that unless we begin to engage with corporate organizations around the solutions and just invest, as an example, in innovative technologies, mm-hmm. we don't get the job done, right? So we have to stop filling up the sink faster than we're draining it, so to speak. And the only way to do that is by engagement. And at New Day, we try to take much more of a carrot approach than a stick approach, like some other organizations. And many of these organizations whom are already a part of the portfolios, we have already witnessed advancements that they're taking in other areas. And going back to Philippe and Ashlyn's point earlier on in this discussion, organizations that are not listening to the consumers today are going to be left behind. 42% of all American purchasing power now sits in the hands of millennials and Gen Zs today already. And if they don't adapt, they will be left behind.
Well, how do we guarantee that that generation makes the right decisions? And Philippe and Ashlyn, how can Echo International help them communicate these concerns in a way that will get the dialogue really rolling?
Here's the good news, is that we don't have to convince young people about the urgency of these issues. Now, what we find with this generation, unlike previous generation, their parents that are still on the fence about some of this stuff, whether or not it matters or whether or not, you know, it's even true. We've got a young, mobilized, concerned, educated, and informed generation. Mm-hmm. And so what we find is it's more about providing tools and knowledge and resources than it is about information. They have access to all the information. What they need is community. We just launched our online platform that encourages anybody who's between 13 and 24 that's listening to join, or folks have kids that are interested in this work, called Gen C at joingenc.org. And it's our online community that is focused on providing tools and a network to young people around the world who care about these issues, so they can meet other young people who care. They can share best practices, have access to all sorts of resources and tools through all of our partners. Learn about programs and initiatives and internships, I mean, you name it, grants, all sorts of different things that are available there, is really about tapping into and mobilizing what is a growing community. And it's wonderful to see the young people we work with from name a country, Cameroon to Brazil to China to the United States to France to wherever, who are saying, you know, I've cared about this my whole life, and maybe my small community, or, you know, it's not an issue for many of my friends, and I felt kind of like an outsider. But then being able to tap into like a network of thousands upon thousands and tens of thousands of young people around the world that care about these issues, they realize they're not alone. And that voice coming together, that chorus, is already affecting extraordinary change. And you're seeing shifts. I'll give one quick example. Regardless of whether you're Republican or Democrat in this country, we're seeing a shift in young, though unfortunately historically, you know, Republicans have been less maybe amenable to environmental protection, at least in the last few decades. You're seeing now young Republicans that are voting en masse around environmental issues and want better progressive approaches to climate change. You're seeing just writ large, a society of young people during the last presidential election, you know, the Biden administration made climate change one of its defining issues. And that was one of the big reasons that young people moved en masse to vote for him, and was the like tipping point in the election. And so that should be a big message to politicians and to political parties right now.
And business owners,
that environment is an issue that motivates young people. It's one of the defining issues that in social justice right now. And so, you know, we don't have to convince young people about these issues. They are already acting. They're swaying politics, economics, and they're driving home a message that they care about this and are going to act accordingly.
Now, Doug, I know that you're doing some of the raising of funds right now, primarily for the communications effort. When will investors get access to the ETF and be able to begin to invest in on behalf of krill protection?
So today, the New Day Ocean Health ETF that trades under the symbol Ahoy on the New York Stock Exchange is already available. Mm-hmm. There is a new adjunct portfolio that is run as a separately managed account that will be available in the next 30 days.
Okay.
But the Ocean Health ETF is investable today.
And let me ask all three of you, if you could paint a picture of what the world will be like in 10 years. We're in 2033. Where would what will success look like? What will the krill population be, and what will we be depending on for omega-3 oils?
Well, you know, with this particular project or this particular problem is solvable. What we need, the picture that we need, is we need a robust network of marine protected areas in the Southern Ocean. Mm-hmm. We also need to eliminate these kinds of unnecessary, in this case, such destructive natural exploitation as the krill fishery that truly does not need to exist. And we need to, so that we can protect, you know, the best that we can do to protect the krill population in the Southern Ocean and try and maintain that system as intact as possible. Because we know that ecosystems that are healthy are more resilient in the face of the onslaught of climate change. But ecosystems that are degraded through overfishing, localized pollution, are much less resilient in the face of warming oceans. So I think in 10 years, we can eliminate this fishery. We can safeguard the future of the Southern Ocean and the future of the ocean, and that's the future of our planet. And we can, we can look back and say, wow, here's a big problem that we solved and solved together and built a better future for ourselves and our children.
Well, from your lips to God's ear, and may there be many algae farmers starting to start businesses in the next 10 years.
Indeed. And not to mention, yes, absolutely. Not just the Southern Ocean, but also providing protein on arid land to millions of people. And help you to alleviate suffering for so many that's coming, particularly in those communities that are disproportionately affected, those historically neglected communities, and particularly those communities in the Global South that are disproportionately affected by climate change. So we can maybe help to rectify some of that injustice.
Well, I want to thank Ashlyn and Philippe Cousteau and Doug Heskey of New Day Impact for joining us today for this World Oceans Day special interview. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Mitch. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
We've been speaking with Travel Channel hosts Ashlyn and Philippe Cousteau of Earth Echo International and Doug Heskey, CEO of New Day Impact Investing, about the underreported problems associated with harvesting krill for use in nutraceuticals and animal feed, as though we need more filler for animal feed. There are three sites you can check out to learn more. Join Gen C, which is spelled S-E-A, like the oceans. Joingenc.org, which Philippe introduced me to during this conversation. If you're 13 to 25 years old, Gen C is an Earth Echo International project crafted to help you learn and communicate about ocean issues. You can also visit Earth Echo International at www.earthecho.org. There's no space, no dash in Earth Echo. earthecho.org, and you can find out more information and links to invest in New Day Impact Investing's ocean health portfolio and the new krill-focused program at newdayimpact.com. And again, New Day Impact is all one word, no space, no dash, newdayimpact.com. You know, we often hear silver bullet solutions touted, the claim that if we just do this one thing, the climate crisis can be reversed and future generations will live happily. But ecosystems are too complex for one change to end a comprehensive problem like global warming. However, the solution to turn the krill population away from the path to collapse is a remarkable example of a broad solution that addresses many problems simultaneously. As we've heard on previous shows, algae oil can be used not just in food, and the benefits of consuming omega-3 oils can be extended to everyone on the planet. In addition to that, algae oil can be made into sustainable fuels, compostable plastics and fabrics, and they can support millions of prosperous farms, especially in the Global South, where climate change is already making land too arid for traditional farming. And if we can reverse the accumulation of CO2 in the atmosphere, perhaps we can restore the climate in which our species evolved and undeniably has thrived. You know, when we talk about supporting the Global South, maybe we should simply be financing the launch, the creation of many of these algae farms. That may be one of the simplest things we can do to raise all boats and address the climate problem. So I hope you take a moment today on World Oceans Day to check your medicine cabinet. Is there an omega-3 product made with krill oil? Well, don't buy another bottle of it. Instead, write letters to the manufacturer and the retailer who sold it to you, and tell them that you're done with krill oil. You'll buy something from them when they make a responsible product. Next, look at your investments and see if you're unknowingly supporting companies that rely on krill oil. Check New Day Impact Investing's site and look for the Ocean Health Investment Portfolio to see what companies they're working with. Perhaps those are good choices for you. And then consider shifting your investments to responsible brands. Finally, take some time to learn about krill and the global effort to protect the oceans. The 30 by 30 program is a model for protecting a third of our land and seas by 2030. Reforestation and rewilding of land often gets most of the attention in 30 by 30 discussions, but the oceans represent our last frontier, one that we should not wantonly destroy as we have much of the dry land around the world. So write your representatives and support organizations like Earth Echo International that evangelize for responsible coexistence with the planet and all the species that inhabit it with us. We're not alone in this, and we're not separate from nature. We have to find one big we that defines the entire planet and all of its inhabitants. Animal, human, vegetable, you name it. We all are in this together. The choice is on us. Make this World Oceans Day the moment that you change. We have some great interviews lined up with the New Day Impact Investing series for the rest of the year. So stay tuned to find your next Earth positive opportunity to act. However, today's the day. Make a krill change. I hope you take a minute to share this podcast or any of the more than 400 interviews we produced on sustainability in your ear with your friends, your family, your coworkers. Tell your boss. Writing a review on your favorite podcast platform will help us a lot. It'll help your neighbors find us, and you can tell them that we're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Audible, and all the other podcast platforms they may prefer. Thank you, folks, for your support, and thank you for listening today on World Oceans Day. I'm Mitch Ratcliffe. This is Earth 911. We'll be back with another innovator interview soon. In the meantime, folks, take care of yourself. Take care of one another, and let's all take care of this beautiful planet of ours. Have a green day.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.